Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It's Third and Long with Coach Penn, and how appropriate was that music for championship weekend? Congratulations to all the championship teams out there. And guess what? 2008 season is over. For those of you first time tuning in, I'm Coach Penn, the head coach of the 2008 California Quake. This week, we officially celebrated three champions and the end of the 2008 season. The season is now over for basically everybody but myself, the ladies on WFB Talk, and all league officials. Hopefully they're still working on getting the kinks out of the 2008 season and where they can improve. Congrats to everyone on surviving the season. Those that were injured, please let your injuries heal so that you may return to the game with the opportunity to play. It's a very fun game, and I'm glad and very happy to have seen all the faces that I met this past weekend in Chicago. The season is over, but that doesn't mean you should stop updating your websites. For those of you who played in the championship games and have updated your websites, thank you, Dallas, Chicago, and who was the other one? H-Town. But H-Town, for some reason, their website wasn't working an hour ago. Hopefully that's not an ominous sign. There's no mention on the Western Michigan Mayhem front page that they even completed the game or that it was finished. They just said that they were playing in the national championship game, and Montreal still hasn't even updated their website, and that's been a recurring theme all season. They still have updates or game recaps from last year and just a 2008 roster on there. So, boo on you, Montreal. But congratulations for winning a championship. That was a very good game, and one of the first things we're going to talk about today is the Montreal Blitz Clarksville Fox championship game. Clarksville Fox and Montreal both won their respective divisions, and they had the opportunity to play in the first ever Tier 2 championship game. It was a phenomenal game, and I'm just sad that not enough people were there to see it. I counted about 75 people in the stands for that game. Yes, it was very hot during that game, and it wasn't the typical weather for football to be played in, but it was a very good game, and it wasn't too bad. I mean, if they're out there playing in pants, then you should be able to get in the stand and watch. Once again, you're on with Coach Penn, Third and Long. If you ever have any questions, feel free to go to the chat room and throw some questions out there. And you can always call in. The number is 347-826-7278. I have three guests this evening. The first guest will be Coach White of the Orlando Mayhem. He should be calling in any minute. And he's also their GM. Second guest will be the offensive coordinator, Coach Konecki, for the Chicago Force, and the last guest will be the head coach, Coach Todd Hughes, of the 2008 champion Dallas Diamonds. We will delve into the Tier 1 championship game during the middle section, and then I will close out the show with what I have broken down on the H-Town Western Michigan game. I wasn't able to be there and have had very little talk with anybody regarding that game, but I did listen in to the ladies on WFB Talk, and Meg was there, and they interviewed their head coach, their MVP, and a couple other people I think were on there talking too. So we will see what we can get on there. So if anybody from H-Town or Western Michigan is listening, know that you were to call in around 8 o'clock and throw out there what you know, what you saw. So if BJ will let me know when you have that 321 area code on the line, go ahead and punch him through, and he will go on there. But the Tier 2 championship game pitted an international team, Montreal, versus a first-year team in the Clarksville Fox. And predictions were wild across the message boards of who was going to win or who had the chances. I mean, it was very hard to to dig up research on Montreal, so I had no idea what to expect. Had never seen the play, never seen tape on them, or heard anything about them, so I had no clue. I just know what I've read off their website. So let's put Coach White through, and welcome to him to the show. Welcome to Third and Long, Coach White.
Hey, good evening. Good evening.
How are you doing over there on the East Coast today?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Recovering from a long weekend.
I totally understand that. I don't think I got out of bed on Sunday. So thank you for joining the show. I know it's late over there.
Come again?
I said thank you for joining the show. I know it's pretty late over there.
Yeah, it's only 10 o'clock. It's not that late. It's not that late.
Oh, you know, everybody's on a different schedule. I don't go to bed until 2 a.m. almost every night. But, you know, 10 a.m. for some people is an hour past their bedtime.
I hear you, Coach.
All right. Well, you were there with me on the field during both games, but I brought you here to talk about the Montreal-Clarksville game because not very many people were there to see that, and personally, I thought it was a very good game. What was your impression of the Tier 2 game?
I was surprised at the play of both teams. I mean, Clarksville came in a very young team. I guess they were the youngest team ever to play in a championship game for IDFL and a very small team. And Montreal came in with this a bigger team. I thought the level of play was great. There were two good football teams out there playing football.
Yeah, I was amazed at the fact that Montreal threw the ball and lined up 90% of the time with at least four receivers.
Well, they were spread offense.
Most spread offenses run in the gun, the shotgun, for those listeners not familiar with football. The shotgun, it's a deep snap. Quarterback has more time to read and more time to throw, but they took every single snap from center.
Underneath center, yeah. Well, you know, their offensive coordinator is a junior in high school, actually turning a senior this year. And he's been scouted by multiple 1AA schools and Division I schools, and that's their offensive coordinator. So you imagine that, too. Put that on top of it.
Yeah, their offense, their whole staff, with the exception to the head coach, who was his father, was very, very young. And, I mean, interviewing them before the game, I was quite impressed with their knowledge of the game because I knew a lot when I was in high school, but I knew I was nowhere near ready to coach a team or run anything to that extent.
Yeah, very good football team.
And on the subject of Clarksville, what impressed you most about Clarksville? The first-year team, you know, first-year coaches, coaching women and everything.
Well, they have some athletes on that side of that team. That team has got some speed. They have decent size up front. They're a very good football team. They got a long way to go, and they're going to get better every single year. And they're going to be a team you have to keep an eye on for the next couple of years.
I will second that. The big thing is though, the score was 26-6. That's not a walk in the park, but that's an easily played game. And I'll let you tell the listeners how unrealistic the score actually was.
Well, if I remember correctly, the first half was a closer game than that. I think Montreal came out in the second half and really pulled away. Clarksville had many chances to stay in the game, but they couldn't. They had a hard time stopping the pass. You know, they couldn't defend the pass very well, and that was their biggest weakness right there.
Yes, they couldn't stop the pass at all. And on offense, they were running all over the blitz, all over the blitz. And every time they would move the ball, they'd resort to a pass. And both their first-string and second-string quarterback could not really throw that well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. What surprised me is that they fumbled upwards of 8 or 9 times.
They had 8 turnovers in that game. Yeah, you can't win a championship game with 8 turnovers. You know, that's hard. That's hard to do. And
statistically speaking, the teams were pretty even in statistics. One team just spent all its time throwing, which is funny because of their 4 touchdowns, 3 of them were on the ground.
When you're prepared to defend a pass and they come out running the ball, you know, makes it a little harder, you know. So it's one of those things. I mean, I think Montreal was definitely a better seasoned team than Clarksville.
Most definitely. I will agree with that.
You know, they were well-balanced, run and pass. They had a very good defense. They had a very stout defense.
Yes, they did. And the running back, Marie-Claude Vincent, that was number 35. I tried to get an interview with her after the game and found out that she only spoke French.
I think
seeing that I didn't speak French, it made it very hard for me to do an interview.
Yeah, I hung out with the head coach of the Montreal pretty much the whole weekend, and it's a very, they got a wonderful group of girls there, ladies there. The staff is real. They're a real nice staff. But very little, not many of them spoke English, or broken English. So it was hard to communicate sometimes with some of their players.
Yeah, I found it fun. The two that I did get to interview, they both were. I would never have known they spoke another language. Their English was so perfect. But I was walking back up the hall to my room, and just like the night before, the Montreal players were out partying. It's funny because when I got to the game, the IWFL council, one of the members came up to me and was like, "Yeah, I don't think Montreal's been to bed yet. They're just so happy to be here." And then when I got home from the game, and I didn't get home back to the hotel until almost midnight, their game ended at, what, 5? They were up partying. It was crazy. I was like, "Oh, great, I'm on the hall with the Montreal Blitz team. That's great." One girl had Sharpie all over her face. Coaches were like, "That's my name right there," in her middle of her forehead. And I was like, "Oh, I need to get in and lock this door immediately."
Actually, she went around and had everybody sign her body, yes.
That is nuts. Oh, she showed up at the party afterwards.
Yeah. No, that's original.
Maybe that's why the hallway got so quiet.
That's original, I got to say that much. I mean, I guess when you have a long season like that and you come down and you win a championship game, I guess you want to enjoy every minute of it. They worked very hard to be there, and that was a very solid football team.
Right, and then on the subject of Tier 2, now I think it's known that the Tier 2 was set up to help smaller market teams, not necessarily, I guess, less, I don't know how to say it, but not as good football teams. It's mainly built for the smaller markets.
I think the difference between speaking as a coach and general manager of a team that's a Tier 2 team playing at Tier 1 level, it's done by size of the rosters and the money. And unfortunately, a lot of these teams don't have the money and the travel like some of these bigger teams. And
well, that's what I found out from Montreal, yeah.
Yeah, Tier 2 is a great concept to build younger teams and smaller teams into a bigger program. And I think it's a wonderful thing.
And I've talked to several people on this, thinking, the IWFL system in the Tier 2 is a great idea, just fundamentally flawed this year. But I think it worked out great in the end because the two teams they put in there both deserved to be in there. And it was a great game.
Yeah, I think the Fox played New England for their Tier 1, am I right? Or was it they played Chicago in their Tier 1 counterpart, am I right?
Right. They Clarksville got beat 40-0. They played Boston.
Excuse me?
Montreal actually played Boston.
Boston, okay. And I think they played them well. So, I mean, that's a good grade level to see where they are with the Tier 1 teams compared to the Tier 2 teams.
Right, and I mean, I don't think any Tier 2 team would have stood a chance against Chicago. They were so big, and they had so many numbers. I mean, Coach Hughes wrote on the message boards that it looked like they had 60 on the sideline, and I know they had more than 45, but I think they had at least 45 dressed.
Well,
in the IWFL, you're only allowed 45.
Don't forget about the other 20 volunteers that went around and helped with putting on the game that day, too. So they had so many players running around that weren't even dressed.
Did.
I mean, that part amazes me. I mean, we have 36 players. We had 4 get injury going into it. We went into the playoffs with 31, 32 players. And just, that part amazes me, having 45 plus 15 to 20 players on standby. That's a part that I wish we can get to as a team,
I wish we could, too. In fact, that's something I emailed by my management team today about with a Quake. I was like, there's something we need to do to get recruiting out there because we need the bodies. Chicago proves that when you have the bodies, you can have good practices, valid practices, and then come game time, you have plenty of bodies to get the work done instead of hoping that enough volunteers show up to run a game.
Well, there's a comparison. I mean, there's definitely a differential between the two tiers of sizes, and that really does make a difference. And, I mean, I wouldn't consider any less play. I mean, both teams played very well on the field. They both showed a great game. I mean, the Tier 1 championship was by far a really good football game. The Tier 2 game was just as good. The score was a little lopsided, but there was still good football on the field. Good coaching, too. So.
Yes. Do you know or do you recall who stood out most in your mind from the Montreal Blitz?
I think the quarterback, in my opinion, really made a huge difference. I mean, the way she led the offense, and offhand, I don't really remember all the stats. I tried to do some research to find some, but the quarterback stood out the most, in my opinion, and the running back had played well too behind that. Some receivers, I just don't recall each individual numbers. I was working real hard, supplying the water for all the sidelines, for all the teams, for all four games, but for all two games, all four teams. So
yeah, I want to send some kudos out there. Want to send some kudos out there to UND. You guys, as well as myself, had our stuff cut out for us that day. We handled a lot, and you guys got a cart though, so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I know that we were there. I would know somebody else would pick up the slack for us, and we love football, and it's something we want to support IWFL and women's football, and this is something that we could offer and help the team stay healthy. So that was the main thing. We had a blast doing it. It was a lot of fun.
All right, on Clarksville, besides their big yellow uniforms, once you got past that, what athletes stood out in your mind?
Well, they had, I think it was number three, their tailback, wasn't it? They had a running back that was just a little scat back.
That was
awesome.
That was number five was a scat back. Number one was the bruiser that had 184 yards on 18 carries.
See, the stats. I mean, that's to me, that's unbelievable. 184 yards rushing that day is just. It's just unbelievable.
And one touchdown, was it?
One touchdown.
It was just, that was just amazing how one just kept on doing everything. I know that five hurt her ankle in the first
towards the end of the game,
half.
Yeah.
I thought it was in the first half because she actually came back in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
And she was limping around, but a big props go out to number 16, Saudia Ashraf from the Montreal Blitz. Mm-hmm. She had a great game. Number 13 is a little Tasmanian devil. She, I can't find her name real quick. Let me see if I can come across that. She knew how to hit. That was Genevieve Hardy. She's listed as a tight end, but there's no way a tight end is 5'2", 140. She was a receiver / DB. She was just crazy out there, hitting people, making tackles, leveling people when she had the ball. The MVP of the game was
number
22. Yeah, Georgina Paul, she was awesome. She made some great catches, but she would have never made those catches if Ashraf didn't put those fades on a perfect rainbow, down the sideline.
I mean, her technique and her arm strength was unbelievable. I mean, to me, she stood out the most. I mean, she had good control, the understanding of the offense. Sometimes she even called some of her own plays and own reads, and she just, to me, that was the amazing part of that game was the passing game. And they do throw the ball. I think they came out the first series and first two series and threw every play was a pass play.
And, well, I actually interviewed him before the game, and I got there because I was getting their starting lineups. Me and Scott were getting their starting lineups, and he actually gave me a three receiver set with two tailbacks. And I was who do you put in when you have a tight end? He's like, oh, we don't run a tight end. We are going to put number 42 in as the extra receiver and take this person out. And he's like, and then we'll go 5-1. He's like, we don't run the ball. We are going to throw the ball on them, and that's what we do. We're not a run-and-shoot team. We're a shoot-and-shoot team.
Yeah, they're a spread offense team. He didn't want to use the word spread because I mentioned to him too. But it's something that he does, and they do very well too.
And so talking with the talking with the Clarksville coaches, I don't know if they had game film or what they were thinking, but they played zone the whole game, and that just killed them. Because
if
you play zone against a good quarterback.
They could have matched up. They could have ran a man easily with them.
Yes, they could have. I agree with you. That's why I was surprised.
And then put a little more pressure on the quarterback. That would have made a huge difference there. But, again, part of coaching is watching film. And I don't know about you, Coach, but, every point I play, I try to get a minimum of three films on them. And I'm wheeling and dealing. I'm mortgaging my future every week for film. So, I mean, I don't mind trading film. I'll trade film with anybody. I don't care. I'll go.
Well, I heard some good rumors. I heard some good rumors. So next year you can actually, send your mortgage payments to where they're supposed to go instead of for film. The league should be actually making every single game film available to every single team.
Yeah, I heard that they're gonna, everybody's gonna send it to one database, and everybody's gonna be able to pull film off from everybody.
Yes.
And,
So
it's only as good as long as we do it. We as coaches and general managers of this league are the ones that actually have to do the film and
yep, the follow through.
Yeah, and that's the thing. As long as we all participate, it'll be okay. And that's a big thing. I'm a film guy. You know,
so am I.
You know, and I struggled this year trying to get film from teams, you know, or you get it late. You know how it is, Coach. You get it late and you struggle. And going into a championship game, I would tell you something. I would have to have at least half the season or more going into it. And, you know,
well, as for the book, I think you're allowed to get your – when you make the playoffs, you're allowed to get one game from the last team, and then if you make the championship game, you're allowed to ask for two additional ones. I think that was the guidelines in the IWFL delegate book or whatever it is, and that's how that was done. But I think next year it'll be a much better system as long as the teams do it, because I know that some teams, they have people running their film that have, first of all, no clue how to film, and secondly, no clue how to run a computer when it only takes putting on a DVD and uploading it. People make such a big deal. I don't know. I'm not computer savvy. I'm like, put it in, push upload. The program's free. They give it to you.
We had a lot of problems with that system they had this year, because we have a Vista program, and it just didn't. They struggled.
That makes sense because I haven't installed Vista yet because I don't want to until I just have to. So hopefully GFS will actually work that out next year where it's compatible with Vista and make it a lot easier, because I never had a problem with this year at all. I mean, the only problem I had was people not uploading the games. Seattle still sent me CDs. And I'm
We spent the second half of the season doing CDs. We did the second half of season CDs, old school. But, you know, again, back to Montreal. I mean, again, he didn't have much film on them either. And when talking to him, he only had like one or two games on him. And I was surprised about that too. I mean, I don't know. Going into a game kind of blind is dangerous in my opinion.
Especially a championship game.
Yeah, they both played well. They both made their adjustments they need to do. It seems that Montreal made the better adjustments because they came out in the second half and shut them down completely. And they had by far a better second half than the Blitz did. I mean, than Clarksville did. So.
Yeah, I was just impressed with the fact that there is a Tier 2 team, league, and how well it worked out, because I was very, very against the fact that games against Tier 2 teams count and vice versa, and the whole point is to keep them separated from the big dogs, and then I was explained that it necessarily wasn't there for the big dogs. It was to regulate their expenses, including travel, so they're only going to travel.
That's the whole thing. Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's just about the monetary value. It's a traveling aspect of it. I know when we went to Pittsburgh to play in the playoffs this year, if we won that game, we would have spent, prior going to Pittsburgh, we spent more time fundraising than we did on the field. And then we would have to go to Chicago and then return to Chicago. If we beat Chicago, go back for a championship, and it would have been near impossible, and we're a small team, and that's the part that, now I know why they have a Tier 2 team, and it's a great concept. Maybe next year they'll play it at nighttime, maybe the Friday night prior or something. It should be almost as equal. I know Tier 1 is the bigger squads, the bigger dogs, but Tier 2 could be a higher level participation, a higher level of championship level, you know what I'm saying?
Because they're going to have – a bigger spread out, more money to travel, and they can regionalize everything.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to see it the same way as Tier 1 level and all that. And not taking anything away from Tier 1s, I think Chicago and Dallas are two wonderful teams. And without a doubt, I think it's one of the better football games I've seen in a long time. And I coached local high school football here, and I tell you something, that was a great football game. And if you missed it, it's a shame because you won't see another one better than that. So,
I've been involved with two games this year. That exciting, but, I mean, you can't compare a regular season game, even though our second one was for the division crown, to the championship game at that same level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've been at, Sarge. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him on the message board. He ranks, best games ever played. I'm sure this will be the top, if not near the top. I believe I was involved with at least four of those games. When the Aftershock and Caliente used to play, they were just battles, just like the Houston Energy versus Dallas.
We've had a rival with Atlanta Explosion, this year we played in the first game of the season. We won in overtime, and we lost to them by 3 points at the end of the season. with a kick, you know, with a field goal. They kicked the field goal in the last second of the game to win that one. You know, and those are the rivals that you work towards and you build, and you know, that's what makes it, that game so great. But nothing equal to that game I saw on Saturday night. That was just a wonderful game. 3,000 people in the stands and a lot of energy and it's a lot of football. You know, it was a great game.
Yeah. And there's a comment on here from
the management.
Yeah, there's a comment on here from BJ saying that we need a tier two in the West, and it's very true. And actually, I was able to talk to the IWFL Executive Council about that and how many teams we would need to make sure that, you know, the level of play is there, travel is around, and then, you know, not decimating the tier one level as it is, because there's several teams that probably should be in tier two on the West Coast.
But you can't mandate it, but it has to be a voluntary thing. If they're willing to go get their, you know, the travel and struggle at tier one, then maybe, you know, that's their decision. But there should be a West and an East. That would be the ultimate goal, to get the tier two too, you know, and really unify the whole league.
I think that's the big thing right now with the IWFL, is that we have tons of East Coast teams, a very good amount of West Coast teams, and then like three Midwest.
Well, the majority of the teams are in the East anyway. I mean, you know, and I don't know the actual numbers, but I know that there's so many teams in the East compared to the West. But
I'm from the East Coast, and I know football's bigger over there. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know about better, but, you know.
It's bigger.
Oh, it's bigger, yeah, there's more numbers. But it would be nice to see the West have their Tier 2 and the East have their Tier 2, but or somehow redesign. There'll be more teams going into Tier 2 this year than last year. Probably, I'd be surprised that there's not at least four or five teams that go to Tier 2 this year. So, and I don't know if any teams will move up. I don't know if the Montreals and the Foxes will move up.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that will work either, but after talking to the coach, he was mentioning that unless he gets more funds, they're going to remain Tier 2. So he's like,
Montreal. Montreal, yeah.
He said that unless we get more funds, there's no way we'd be able to afford to move up to Tier 1. He was very confident that he could compete with Tier 1 teams after having done so with Boston, who was considered upper echelon of the East. Mm-hmm. They just barely missed out, you know, the playoffs. Yeah. There was four teams that missed it by a game. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of them. It's tight schedule, tight records this year. You know, one loss really hurts you, and it's like back to collegiate, you know. You know, one loss might knock you out of the top five, you know. So, you know, it's a big thing. And there's a lot of teams that didn't make it to the playoffs with a better record or equal record, you know. So.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, you're on Third and Long with Coach Penn. My guest is Coach White, who's the head coach and GM of the Orlando Mayhem. We're talking about the Tier 2 championship game. In a few minutes, we're going to switch over to the Tier 1 championship game. I'll have a couple call-ins from there. Coach Konecki of the Chicago Force, offensive coordinator, and then later will be Todd Hughes, the head coach of the Dallas Diamonds. Coach, I want to thank you for coming on and offer a chance to you to call in at any Wednesday you want. We are all at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Yes, I might make this a routine.
Yeah, we will be doing this weekly, and next week I will start the off-season talk, and then once college football season starts, I'll intermix some college football and then some pro and high school, because, you know, I'm just talking about football here and how we can take the best and the lessons learned from those three divisions of men's football and translate it into creating a better league for women's football.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So thank you again for being on here.
I appreciate this opportunity, and I look forward to talking to you again, Coach.
Yeah, I look forward to keeping in touch. Thank you very much, and we will now welcome Coach Konecki online. Oh, looks like we lost the call. I know he's out there somewhere. He said he's going to be calling in. Still got 2 minutes. So let me go into what I saw at the Chicago Force Dallas Diamonds championship game. Two very good teams battling it out on the gridiron. Cliche after cliche, hard hits. I mean, I don't know how many things I could say. You weren't there, guess what? You missed a great game. Hopefully the league will release a DVD. They had paid for three cameras to videotape a game, but by some unforsaken reason, we had five. So who knows how that works out, but that's a great thing that somebody was actually so excited to be part of the event that they actually did more than what they got paid for. And we would like to thank that camera crew and everybody involved. So if Coach Konecki is online, I will bring him in. Coach Konecki?
Hey, Coach Ken, how are you?
Pretty good. I can hear the reverb from the radio behind you.
How about now?
Let me see. Nope, don't hear my voice. Oh, actually, I do in the background very light. You might want to just mute it and then unmute it afterwards.
Okay.
I have a mute button on my laptop, so I don't know if you do or not. I just kind of mute mine all the way down.
I think it's not even on this computer here.
Oh, that's classic. Oh, I don't hear myself now, so there we go. All right, so congratulations on making it to the game first.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, that is a bad reverb. How do you feel about how the game went?
Well, obviously, you know, we would have liked to walk away with the W, but, you know, to go all the way to the fifth quarter for the Diamonds to beat us is, you know, was a heartbreaker for us, and you know, congratulations to them. They played a great game.
Right, and we talked before the game, not so much in detail, but roughly about what your offensive game plan was. How do you feel about how that was executed?
Well, you know, when we talked before the game, we talked about how we were going to try to spread them out and you know, take advantage of what we thought were some mismatches. And, you know, offensively, we tried to stick to that game plan. Obviously, the one that hurts us is that very first opportunity to score. We didn't punch it in on four consecutive plays. Next time down, we didn't make that same mistake again.
Yes, I was actually in the end zone during that huge battle inside the one. Four downs inside the one. I was like, if Chicago scores, this is huge to not only their psyche, but the psyche of the Diamonds, because this could just demoralize them, as they were rarely scored on all year. And then the first drive of the game, boom, Chicago goes down there and scores.
Yeah, that's one, you know, I think I told you earlier today, as a coach, you're constantly learning, and you know, it's happened to me a couple other times, this past season when coaching the boys, and I got to go back to the drawing board. An inch, you think that you should be able to just slam it on in there, but, you know, Dallas, they hit a brick wall, and they kept us out.
Yeah, they're a big bunch of ladies right there, and they're not only just big, they know how to play, and they're very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was as far as any team we've seen, they're definitely the biggest and strongest team that we've seen all season long.
Yeah, and I don't think that you guys were, you know, outsized by that much, but they were just a bit bigger than you guys, and I was very impressed with the way that you guys not only kept up with them, but stuck it to them, being the smaller team.
Yeah, you know, I was really happy at points throughout the game with how well our offense clicked, and defensively, I know that our defense coordinator definitely had a plan, and you know, the plan was to try to stop their offense and try to stop Jessica, and obviously that's a very difficult task for anybody to undertake, and you know, unfortunately, you know, just we ran out of time, and you know, we talked about that last series, and there's a timeout earlier in the game that really could help us out, and a couple other things that transpired, and who knows, if we have five more seconds, it's a different outcome of that game potentially.
Very true, very true. Now, I would like to get your perspective as the offensive coordinator on the performance of Christoffi.
Oh, man, she was awesome. She was awesome. She's definitely like having a coach out on the field. The way of the offense that we were running is designed is I teach the quarterback how to run the offense, and when they're out on the field, they get to take it over. If they see something based upon what we've talked about, they have the opportunity to make that change and do the same thing with the young men that I coach. So I may call a play, and you know, I think certain plays can be called, and they maybe check at the line based upon something that we've seen, and you know, they make me look like a genius, because we would have went with the other play, you know, probably would have got stopped. So for as a coach, that's a tremendous asset and advantage to have.
Yes. I mean, I watched some film on you guys, and based on that film, and it was a Clarksville game where you guys just ran and destroyed them. I was not impressed with Christoffi at all. I thought she was a very good running quarterback who could manage the game. and because most of her passes in that game were just lobs or came out of her hand wrong, and then to see her in person, the way she performed, I was amazed, and maybe that was because I had a smaller impression of her, but I mean, to see her out there, she was very energetic, especially on the sideline. And she just led that team, and her balls that she threw were tight, nice spirals. And then when she had to put a touch on it, it was there. And I was just very impressed with how she managed the offense and then used her legs in certain situations to just confuse the hell out of Dallas's D.
Yeah, you know, as a quarterback, she's obviously getting better game by game. And I think when we watch high school, college, professional level football, you see quarterbacks in their growth. And I think for Sammy, that was one of those games where you can definitely see that there was a tremendous amount of growth that took place. And she is going to be a very, very good quarterback in the NIWFL for a long time. I mean, as far as, you know, the mechanics, they were always there. It was one of those things, just getting her to see what I see and what we as an offensive staff see, and her to make the correct decisions and not force balls in places where they weren't supposed to go.
Right. And, well, how many years has she been playing?
This is her, I believe it's her second year with the Force, and I believe that she did play some football, actually, in high school out in California, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, yeah, I did remember Pete and John talking about that during the radio show, or I guess team broadcast, and I was wondering about that because I wasn't so sure. But based on, go back to some of the mistakes made from things that you could control,
right,
not things
right.
Like as in refs blowing calls, which they did blow some on both sides, and they did have a couple bad calls, but overall I don't think they did a bad game. It's just, especially with, you know, all the different rules, but we'll get past that because that's a topic for a different show that I want to listen to.
Absolutely.
On the things you can control.
A couple of things that obviously, you know, stick out, and as far as mistakes, you know, I'm going to take, you know, full blame for that, you know, the four times down there on the one-inch line. You know, that's, as a coach, to have that happen is, you know, for me is just unforgivable. I mean, I can say with a lot of confidence that that's not going to happen to me again. I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me in the past year. It's actually maddening. So I will take full responsibility for that. But, you know, as a coach, there's a level of growth that has to take place on my end. Obviously, you know, we didn't give up sack that entire game. So, you know, offensive line play from a passing standpoint was very good. There was a couple times where, you know, Dallas executed us on the defensive line, and they stopped a couple of our runs later on in the game. And you know, and drop balls when you're throwing team is just part of it, and you're trying to limit those sorts of things. And there's a couple of balls that we dropped, and you'd obviously like to have those back, but unfortunately you can't. And those are learning experiences, especially for young players that we have in our receiving core.
Yeah, the dropped balls in the first half, I was just like, well, if they're not going to catch the ball, the game's over. They're playing, which is something I talked about for, I don't know, a month, because we had to play them, and we prepared, and we knew that we had to be able to pass against them. So I knew for anybody to actually beat them, they'd have to pass, and you came right out and was throwing the ball, and I was like, oh, if they can come start completing these passes, they got a chance. And then 81, I think her name was Harper?
Right, Harper, yeah, Patty Harper. Mm-hmm.
She dropped a couple key balls in the first half, but she had a great second half. So,
yeah,
she made up for those drop balls.
No, absolutely. You know, there was the one where, Sammy actually lobbed the ball, and the Dallas free safety just had a beeline on Harper, and absolutely just cracked her. She got hit by the defensive back at the same time. She came down with the ball.
I was impressed. That was a great catch. Yeah. I was like, first of all, I thought 14 Horton was going for the interception. She was looking straight at the ball, and then when she saw the girl jump, instead of trying to out-jump her, she just put a shoulder into her and leveled her, and I was like, oh, Harper's not going to get back up. And after a couple seconds, she did, and I was like, that's impressive right there. Way to take a hit.
Yeah, she definitely, you know, our receiving core is very young, and you know, they're all coming back next year. We're really excited about that. And obviously, our running back is coming back, Melissa Smith, and, you know, majority of our offensive linemen, as far as I know, are also coming back. So, you know, from an offensive standpoint, we're really happy. You know, we would like to get more into the spread stuff earlier on in the season, but we tried it, and we just weren't having a lot of success with it, so we did have to, based upon what you saw in the Clarksville game, definitely rely on our power running game early on in the season. As the season progressed, you know, we got better and better at throwing the ball. Maybe part of that was the weather, and part of that was just the growth of our younger players at those receiver spots.
Well, the point you brought up about not allowing a sack all night, I think I only remember Grisafi getting hit once, and that was in the fourth quarter when Springer was already going both ways, because one of the big things I saw was that there was no way they were ever going to stop your passing game if they were going to have three down linemen, three linebackers, walking one linebacker out to the slot receiver or spread receiver, and then leaving the safety 20 yards deep. I was just like, are you kidding me? That safety is wasted. You need to walk that person up as an extra linebacker because you're obviously playing man. And I was just impressed that they never switched, and you said, well, if you're going to leave that, we're going to keep hitting these quick passes. And then you pop it over the top right when they would suck up on play action. So that was very impressive play calling. My big complaint was, why wasn't 87 used at the end of the game?
Melissa Smith?
Yes, right, 87 was a bruiser.
Yeah. Well, you know, Coach, the big thing there at the end of the game, obviously I think at some point in time, score was dictating what we were doing, as well as Dallas, and they made an adjustment, and we were running the counter game, and we just weren't executing as well as we were earlier on in the game. And so they really forced us to stop running that particular play. And you know, my hats are off to them. I mean, they took it away. So I said, all right, well, then we'll just keep going back to this until that gets stopped. And if they stop that, well, we'll try something else. So, you know, as far as Melissa not getting touches towards the end, you know, it was 29-29, I believe, with 6:14 left in the game. And, you know, we thought for sure we'd be able to put another one in there, and then we just ended up in a situation where we had no timeouts, and you know, we had a kicker who we didn't feel could, who we're very confident in, but obviously after a certain distance, we're not as confident in their ability to hit the long field goals.
Right. I had talked to Coach Stahl before the game about how he felt about the special teams and everything like that, and he was like, you know, we haven't, you know, shown the confidence in her in the past 2 weeks, having gone for two, but, you know, that was my decision to win the game because we're at home and we have the confidence and, you know, the crowd's behind us and all that stuff. He's like, but, I mean, I have the utmost confidence in her, and she wants that kick. She wants that kick, but it has to be for 37 in. And watching, you know, those last 16 seconds tick off, I was like, oh, they're at the 29-yard line. Oh, they got the 5-yard penalty. That should have been a 15-yard penalty. They're at the 24. Are they going to attempt a field goal from 41? Can she make it? And then you guys completed that pass, and I was like, oh, no timeouts. I knew it was going to bite him. They used that timeout on an extra point.
Right, yeah, that was the timeout that was using an extra point. You know, I mean, I guess you can look back and say, you know, we shouldn't have called that timeout at that particular point in time.
Well, Coach Marinitis actually came up to me. He's like, that was my fault. I'm the one that called it. He's like, I should have just let the delay game happen and kicked it from 5 yards back. It's a freaking extra point. And
yeah, but there's
like,
no guarantee.
That was just a waste of a timeout.
Yeah, there's no, you see, I don't know. I mean, there's no guarantees even if we, you know, if we move 5 yards back that it's an automatic chip shot.
And I'm a coach and have been through that, and I'm not second-guessing you, and I understand that every field goal and extra point is an adventure in women's football. So I don't want to throw second guess out there saying, you know, you should have done that.
No.
I was very impressed with the play calling and the way that the game flowed offensively and defensively from your coaching staff. It was very nice to see somebody else get yelled at for walking on the field once in a while.
I don't know if I ever did get yelled at. I know some
other
people.
Well, no, Marinitis did. He was 15 yards on the field half the time, and Lori Frederick, one of the IWFL executive council members, she came rocking by in her suit, and I was like, where are you going? She's like, my pet peeve, and I'm like, who's on the field? And I looked over, and Coach Marinitis on the field. I was like, ah, I got yelled at that before by you. That's classic.
Coach Maniatis is a very intense individual. He did great. I thought he did a great job.
Defense coordinators have to be intense. I'm sorry, they have to be.
Yeah, we're polar opposites in a lot of respects, and I mean, we're very same in a number of respects. And, you know, as an offensive coordinator, it does you no good to blow your top because then you lose focus of where you're at, what's the down distance, how much time is left. But if we can go back to that, the waning moments of that game, we actually had the field goal unit ready. And, you know, we thought that we'd take a couple shots And, you know, and the post was open. If Sammy waits, you know, another half a second, it's a touchdown. I I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, we just ran out of time and you know, didn't have any timeouts left. And you know, Dallas did a great job. And then coin toss, and they came out and they ran it right down the field and scored and won the game. And my hats are off to them.
Yeah, my hat was off to them too. I was quite impressed with the game that both of you put on. And once again, you're on the WFB Talk continues. Third and long with Coach Penn. Right now, I'm chatting with Coach Konecki, the offensive coordinator for the Chicago Force. We just finished breaking down one hell of an offensive game plan you had for that game. And I want to thank you, Coach, for coming on Third and Long. In the upcoming weeks, I am actually going to be talking about off season and what teams vary in doing during the off season, and I hope I can have you back on so you can discuss what you have your ladies do during the off season, or what kind of clinics you run and tryouts and stuff like that.
I really would enjoy that, Coach. You don't by any chance have the breakdowns as far as the statistics for the game, do you, as far as passing versus running ratios?
The ratios, I do not have. Yep. I have not got the game film yet. I do know some specific stats, like Springer, I think, had 252 rushing. She had another 90, I think, receiving. And then you had, I think, 194 passing by Gristoffi, and I think 87 had close to 100 because she did break a couple of long ones for 20 yards.
Right,
it just,
yeah.
She didn't get the ball enough. And then I think it was pretty even. Well, no, sorry, I wasn't taking a shot, I swear.
No, that's all right. That's all right. She probably should have got the ball more often, yeah.
But I haven't got it. As soon as I get it, I'll forward that email over to you. I'm hoping that the league's supposed to send me a tape of the game or DVD of the game through GFS, and so I can break it down for clarification and details and all that fun stuff. But I know there will be an official DVD out, hopefully within the next month or two. So thank you again, Coach.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And to Coach Hughes and the Dallas Diamonds, congratulations. It was a wonderful game, and that was probably one of the most exciting games that I've had the opportunity to be part of. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome, Coach. You have a good evening.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
That was Coach Konecki of the Chicago Force. Right now I'm going to welcome in Coach Todd Hughes, the head coach for the Dallas Diamonds. He is the 2008 champion. The IWFL champion. That adds four rings now he has to his collection case, I guess you could say. I'm not sure if he adds another diamond to each ring or, you know, takes it into the jeweler, but that's some heavy hardware on your hand. Welcome, Coach Todd Hughes.
Appreciate it, Jeff. Appreciate it. Thank you.
How are you doing this evening?
We still haven't got the ring yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, I didn't expect to get the ring within 3 days.
After paying for all the travel expenses, I don't know what we'll get. We'll see.
Yeah, cut out a little, have one of your artistic players make a little paper ring up, and it'll do just as good.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Well, you're welcome. You're on Third Along with Coach Penn. Right now I have Coach Hughes, the head coach of the champion Dallas Diamonds, Tier 1 IWFL right now. Got some questions to shoot his way. We did talk before the game, and that was probably the first time I actually talked to you one-on-one, even though we've coached you. Gets each other, what, three different times now, right?
I believe so. Sure is.
Yeah, two with the Aftershock back during our last year of existence, and then one this year in your heat. And I certainly wasn't sticking around in that heat to chit-chat some more.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
That was a horrible game to be playing in. So I want to congratulate you, first of all.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Josh. And like I say, it was a hot game that day, no doubt about it. You got a great group of young ladies there, and it definitely heats a factor. That, you know, we home field advantage on that. We understand it. And again, you know, I'm not the proponent of playing at 3 o'clock totally, but you know, it does come into hand. You know, being like I said, our girls train in it, so that's you know, comes in handy for us occasionally.
Oh, that's what home field advantage is all about. And it's funny because our first two games at home were ridiculously hot. Then the last games we played were all nice and cool. We're like, what happened? Because they were like 100 in April when we first played them. And then as soon as we got to, you know, late May, it was like cooled off and it's like comfortable 80 degrees. We're like, well, so much for the weather in Southern California.
Well, I know some of the girls got together tonight for a little meeting, and we're pretty glad we weren't practicing tonight because I think it's going to be about 103 the next 3 days over here with humidity about 50%. So I'm pretty glad we're not practicing right now.
Yeah, that's one of the things I start off my show. I was like, congratulations to everybody. The season is over. Nobody has to go to practice this week. So that's a great thing. As we talked like before the game, I did a brief interview with you to kind of get a breakdown of what you were looking for and expecting during the game. And I know that you stressed that the defense, it was going to come down to how the defense was performing and how they could stop Chicago. A couple other things that we mentioned is that you had some new sets to come out and that, you know, it wouldn't be all about Jessica Springer because we had other plans to get our stuff done. And I just wanted to see how you felt about your defensive performance.
Well, we weren't pleased with it. I mean, you know, they came through in crucial situations, but overall, you know, we really thought we could, you know, stop the run. We thought that's what we had to do. You know, we're based on the two films we saw was Detroit and Pittsburgh game. Basically, you know, some of the stats that she had was she had two completions for 8 yards with Detroit and eight completions for 55 yards, you know, with Pittsburgh. So we didn't think, you know, they were a passing team. I mean, obviously, they just didn't look good as a passing team on film. Now, obviously, they proved us wrong because, I mean, they were just phenomenal. I mean, that quarterback was fantastic because, you know, she's got good speed and she was putting the ball on the money. So, you know, we weren't totally prepared for that, you know, as much as we should have been, you know. But, and again, the running back, we knew she was going to be tough. There's no doubt about it. And that's what we set out to do was try to stop her. And luckily we did in crucial situations. I think she got a little tired at the end, and like I said, she didn't get the ball as much, but they made up for it on the pass game. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that was something I was just talking to their coach about, how I watched film on them as well, and I was like, you know, I wasn't impressed by Grisafi at all. I was like, she's very good at managing an offense, and then she was very good at play action and bootlegs. And I considered her basically a running quarterback, and when I saw her throwing, I was just like, holy, how'd this happen?
Yeah.
I was amazed on that. And just for all the new listeners, where we have Coach Hughes on the phone of the Dallas Diamonds, anybody that has any questions, feel free to hop on the chat board, throw some questions out there. And if you feel like calling in, the number is 347-826-7278. Next, we got the offensive game plan. You plan to do all these new things, and I did see the wishbone, which you talked about, and a couple of the power sets where you did run, but in the end, starting the second half specifically, it looked like you went back to your regular offense, which were three wide, whether it be diamond trips or spread outs, and then you also went back to that unbalanced look, which we practiced for 3 weeks, that unbalanced look, and we were ready for it. And I think you ran it, two plays against us, and then it seemed to really, really throw Chicago's defense off.
Yeah, when we added that, we put it into a twin set, you know, and ran unbalanced out of twins. So, that, you know, and that's confusing. You know, I mean, even the younger kids and women in general, you know, when you tell them something, you got a gap on a certain, you know, defense or whatever, and then you shift over. I made a blog entry today or yesterday about, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, this is not a cut down on any coach or whatever. It's just because, I mean, I've coached both sides of the ball. But, you know, there's different philosophies on how to stop it. And there's no tried and true, you know, the decision on how to do that. I mean, you know, you shift over or you shift your linebackers over. You know, there's different philosophies. But you know, it's interesting how people compensate for it. But, you know, I think that, you know, that helped us in a lot. Our game plan as far as it was attacking them off tackle, there's no doubt about it, you know, and I think we did a pretty good job of it that, you know, the other night. But, you know, we tried to mix it up with different sets. Like I said, we did go back to that, and they did get us out of our game plan as far as, you know, I did want to spread it out. I did think we could. Bottom line, you know, I mean, I'm no dummy. I'm going to go with what works. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, happy with our passing game as far as, you know, we hit the short-range passes, what we were looking for. We hit, you know, a couple of deep ones occasionally. But, you know, we're just not a, you know, down-the-field type team and, you know, vertical team. But, you know, we just, you know, attack them horizontally and go from there. And, you know, use a running game and things like that. But key to get shaken up, you know, in the first half a little bit and wasn't sure how she was going to be running, and she's just not a power-type runner, so we kept it with Odessa and pretty much Springer, but Odessa mixed in too. But I would have liked to give it out, you know, more and spread it out, but well, I was happy too that we got basically all of our receivers caught a ball, so that was good. So, you know, our offensive game plan other than, you know, spreading it around a little bit more was pretty much on. Like I said, you did see the wishbone, but we didn't see the true wishbone because we wanted to run some option out of that with Odessa and some things like that. But again, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, once you guys went down 8-0, I saw some trickery, and I was dying that Chicago didn't notice it. In fact, even the announcers upstairs didn't notice it while I was on the sideline doing the reporting. You were down 8-0, first time you guys had been down all season, and the first thing you do is get a first down and then throw Cantu in the background, in the backfield. And nobody noticed that. I think I was the only person on the field to notice that.
Well, and you're familiar with us. I mean, you know a little bit about it and about Houston and things like that. Like I said, we've got two great quarterbacks, and, you know, during the season we split time with them. But Karen got hurt, you know, hurt a little finger, and she was out about 3 games. But we decided to go with, you know, our tried and true veteran, and she didn't get as much playing time as she wanted. But, you know, we were going to utilize her, and she came in, and we put that play in. Basically saw the safety, 27. She flew to the ball on the run, you know, which was great. But because of that, we figured we could catch her on something. So we slipped Springer on an unbalanced set and put her tight end on the left-hand side and a slip on the seam route on the back side. And that's how we got him on that. So, and that kind of backed her off a little bit. So it helped, out, you know, open up the run a little bit so she didn't come so hard. So
yeah,
that was the intent.
That play was a momentum switch right there because that crowd was freaking nuts. That Chicago was leading, and then 71 yards in like a minute and a half, you guys tied the game up, and it all happened on that play right there where you did a little pro split set, and you could tell Cantu wasn't really sure where she was lining up, and you swept it to the right, and Springer was on the left. She went straight down the field, and if Cantu could have set her feet, it would have been a touchdown, but she basically threw it a little bit on the run and unbalanced, but Springer made a great catch and was tackled, not by one person, but after she drug him a couple yards, and I was just like, whoa, Dallas has something up their sleeve, too. I was like, how do you miss the second string quarterback, which should be first string on most other teams, I'd probably say almost all of them, just hopping in the backfield as a running back.
You know, and she didn't play any very much the last 2. Well, she wasn't in Seattle at all. She didn't make the trip to Seattle. And,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she didn't make the trip to Seattle. And the first playoff game, you know, with y'all, you know, she got in a little time at the end, but that's it. So she really, you know, I don't know which film, the two films they were allowed to get or which one they decided to take. So it depends on which one they saw. But, you know, like I said, we're not a big trick team. You know, we will put in one or two trick plays, you know, every now and then for a game, but then try to switch it up if we don't use it. But other than that, you know, we just thought that would help, you know, control the safety a little bit and keep her backed off so we could run the ball, hit it outside a little bit and, you know, things like that. But, you know, it was a good play. It worked, and it was good. The other thing I was happy with, and we came out the second half, and it was always a goal of us the first time to score, you know, in our first series, but we went into no huddle. And that we almost ran
it
a couple more times because I think that, and that was one of the things we pride ourselves on, being in shape. And, you know, looking at the film, I think that Chicago's done a great job of controlling the ball in the film, and they utilized that 40-second clock. I mean, that first quarter flew by. I mean, I think we had the possessions twice like during the first quarter. So I figured, you know, it would be a good shift for us and get them kind of off kilter as far as we ran that, and I think it did. And we almost went back to it later down the line, but I think that kind of set the tone for the second half. And, you know, we'll go 5 or 6 quarters with anybody if we have to, and that's, you know, we pride ourselves on it. But, again, the defense, you know, they were phenomenal. We knew they were going to be great. You know, Jessica, you know, like I said, told you, they're going to have to stop us, and we knew that. And, you know, we utilized Jessica. But, you know, this game for her, it against a great defense like they are, and she gets to show out because, you know, I was looking at some of the stats earlier, and couple of games, in the first 2 games, she had 4 carries, 3 touchdowns the first game, 3 carries, 3 touchdowns the second game. You know, in four of the 8 games we played, she carried the ball 4 times or less. So,
right.
You know, she didn't really get to show out, and, you know, we used her out on defense. And, there again, we didn't utilize her on defense like we usually do because, you know, when we put her on defense, she intercepts the ball. You know, it's just wherever she's at, she's going to be with the ball, and you know, that's. But we, like I said, we need her on offense more than we did defense.
Yeah, that's one thing I talked to her about in the post game interview. I went up to her and I was like, you know, the first half you didn't play much defense at all. I know you started, but they were conserving you for offense. I was like, how did it feel? You know, the whole second half, because once it went 15 all, you were basically on the field the whole time. I mean, I saw that they took you off kickoff return and they took you off punt return, which. to me, it boggled me that you took her off punt return, because she is so devastating on punt return. Put her in the open field is just crazy. But I understood why you do it, so I'm not questioning that. I was just, like, amazed that she could go both ways and make the plays that she made. That was just, you know, Springer is all world, and I hate coaching against her, and I told her that in the interview. I was like, I can't stand you. I don't ever want to play you. It's just too hard to adjust your personnel to realize this is a big truck going 50 miles an hour. She knows how to run, and she knows how to make you not only make you miss, but if you get in the way, just run you over. And my girls did a good job when they're healthy, and it's just like, you can't do that all game. She's too big and too strong.
Yeah, there's only one way to stop her, and that's you got to get low on her. There's no doubt about it.
And I was surprised.
Only been a couple of teams that really have ever stopped her or even slowed her down. That's Houston and SoCal. I mean, they did a good job of, you know, occasionally. But like I say, you don't ever stop her; you just slow her down. And I take both, you know, hats off to both offensive lines. I mean, they gave us a tough night on defense. Their offensive line gave the quarterback plenty of time to throw, and we couldn't get to her. And I don't think Karen was sacked the whole game either. So I mean, our offensive line did a great job protecting. And, they opened the first two or three yards from Springer. You know, yeah, granted, she may get three or four, five, six more of that. But, you know, they opened up some pretty good holes for her, and you got to give credit to that, too.
Right, and I want to give you kudos for everybody says that, you know, all we had to do was give the ball to Springer. She's nothing without Springer. But on a very, very important fourth and two near the end of the game, when you guys were, I think it was 21-22, you guys were still down. And fourth and two, around midfield, Springer, I don't even think, was in the game. And to me, that's the hardest time to defend you guys, because you don't even know who you're going to give the ball to. I mean, you have a plethora of running backs, but nobody was really doing too much that game. So it was all about Springer. Rachel May, my nickname for her is the Walking House, she got that ball, and, I mean, she had been tackled pretty hard by those linebackers earlier in the game. She literally ran over two people and ended up getting like 6 yards in that play. So I thought that was just a huge play goal, not to have your star person in there on fourth and two and just give it right up the middle and say, hey, here's our biggest person. Try and tackle her before she can get 2 yards, because she could fall down and get 2 yards. So.
Yeah, she's a hoss. I mean, and I think some of the linebackers agree on some of the blocking too, because I saw one play. She laid out a linebacker flat on her back, kept going, knocked somebody else down. I mean, knocked two people down right in a row. And that stuff she does. When she's on, I mean, she opens holes for them. There's no doubt about it. So, yeah, I could credit to Rachel for sure. There's no doubt about she. And she's young. She's got a few more years left in her, too. So you'll see a lot of her, hopefully.
Yeah, she by far, she was the biggest thing that stood out in the game against us. I was just very impressed with Rachel May. She was very impressive. And then speaking of their linebackers, you know, they had a bunch of stuff written about them, about how good their defense was, and I'd watched film on them, and they were a very disciplined defense, very, very good, but there's no way that I ever saw them keeping up with you guys speed-wise, because Odessa Jenkins, Q Ragsdale, Springer, they're all so fast, and none of their linebackers were nearly as fast as your running backs, but their defensive game plan basically, I guess, made you guys work inside, but as soon as you guys got outside, you guys were gone, because I think Springer scored twice around the outside for just boom and look, you know, her little jog thing, and she's gone. But what was your impression of the linebackers?
I 31 is the one that stands out to me. She was giving us hell all night, and excuse me, but she was all in everywhere, and we had to make some adjustments. But again, I think mixing in, like I said, we didn't run it all the time, but we ran, you know, that unbalanced and twin set a lot, mixed it in and makes, you know, did some things like that. And I think that's confusing to a defense, you know. I mean, it gets them caught off guard if they're not practicing against it and know what they're doing, or the coaches don't make it adjust. And even when the coaches make the adjustment, it's like I say, when the girls are concrete, you tell them they've got this assignment on this defense, and, you know, you start shifting over or doing these other things, and it kind of, you know, throws them out of kilter. So, you know, I think that helped us out a little bit and, you know, gave us a little bit of edge. And we'll continue to do it just like we always do.
Yeah, I was very impressed with Pam, too. I went up to her at the end of the game, and I've been around women's football for 7 years now, or 7 seasons, I should say, and that was some of the best linebacker play I'd ever seen by one significant person. She read those plays very well, and you guys do not do a lot of misdirection. Most of your stuff is straightforward. I mean, I called probably 90% of your plays that you were going to run during the game from the sideline. I was like, oh, this is the set they're going to line up in. This is the play they're going to run. And it looked to me like she had actually watched the film and actually understood it, because a lot of players will watch film, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, but they don't understand what they're looking at. They're too busy watching the play instead of watching how it develops and the keys to read off of.
Yeah, we did call a couple counters early in the game, and that nobody pulled because of the way they were lined up. And so, you know, it happens, and then so we got away from that. But, yeah, we don't do a lot of misdirection, and we do occasionally. But, you know, like I said, we're just going to come at you hard, and then you're going to have to stop us. And then once you stop us, and we'll go. And I'll run the same play four times in a row until you stop it. That's just me. So,
I don't disagree with you.
I know some of the girls get frustrated with me, but
They do. I get yelled at on the sideline for that stuff sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt.
Why are we running that play again? Well, they haven't stopped it. Why would we stop running it?
That's right. And who thinks you're going to call something for us four times in a row? So, I mean,
exactly.
I don't know. It's a chess game, so you know, you do what you do. But I'm real pleased with the girls' performance. I mean, again, we made some mistakes, and it could have been really crucial in the game with that fumble kickoff towards the end of the game,
yeah.
You know. Interception, you know, and it was a catchable ball that, you know, that was...
That was 87, right?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was 87. She tipped the ball and they caught it. And, you know, crucial mistakes, and, you know, that could have cost them a game in a close game. I heard some people griping about the officiating. Well, you know, I've seen a heck of a lot worse. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best I've seen, but, you know, I don't think it costs anybody the game, honestly, you know, in my personal opinion. But, you know, a close game like that, officiate can't come into effect. We had a timeout, but we called the ref over on a questionable call, and, you know, they checked it on the rule book, and they called the right call. So, you know, that's when we stopped that. And but overall, you know, it was a great game. You know, Chicago is a great team. There is no doubt about it. You know, they're going to be a dominant force if they can keep everybody together. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I just talked to Coach Konecki, and that's one of the things I brought up to him. I wanted to keep him away from officiating, because officiating you can't control. And the IWFL and women's football in general, you just got to deal with what you got. And, you know, you know that calls are going to be blown every game, and just do what you can do to win the game. And he admitted that they probably made more mistakes than the officials did. So, I mean, he's very understanding of how the game went, and that they weren't in control of the game, but it kind of lingers in the back of their mind that, oh, they still had a chance, even though they screwed up if the officials would have called things. So I just, as a coach, and, you know, I try not to get too frustrated with officials, because they're a necessary evil.
I hope that they don't. I hope everybody, the fans in Chicago and everybody, like I say, it was a great game. And you know, if they linger on that, it's something that they can't control. And really, I don't think was the outcome of the game. You know, if they take their determination and their hunger in the next season, they're going to be tough. They're going to be very tough. You know, I remember I saw that hunger. I told the girls before the game, I said, they're hungry. I said, yeah, I remember that hunger that first time. When, you know, that first season we didn't make it to that one game, we lost out to before we went to the Super Bowl. I said next year we were hungry, and you know, it carried on for a year. And then, like I say, it's easy to lose that hunger, and there's nothing like having that hunger. So they need to utilize that and take that into next season, and they're going to do really good. The coaching staff's phenomenal. They're very disciplined, very impressed with them. The league did a great job as far as you know, the whole turnout and everything else. It was a great job. We had a great time. They're doing a real good job. I mean, again, I, you know, have my opinion about certain things like anybody else, and that's only for the betterment of the league. And I think that they're willing to listen as long as they do, and everybody's on the same page as far as where they, you know, getting to the same place, not how to get there maybe, but, you know, work together and get there, and maybe we can get this thing on the way it needs to be going.
That's a perfect segue to what I was just going to say. This show continues.
I figured it was, Josh.
Well, thank you, coaches. I really appreciate that. What we're going to be doing in this show is a weekly basis, and I will be talking about women's football primarily every week, and next week starts the official off season, and I'm going to have coaches on a weekly basis discussing things that we see need to be improved in our leagues and things that we do in the off season to prepare our team and to recruit and to get strong. I know you have one of the best strength conditioning programs that are out there, so I hope that you will be on in the future so we can discuss those things and pick your brain to use it against you later. So,
and you have my number, so you can call me anytime. We'll definitely work towards that.
Well, I very much appreciate that help and support, and I plan on using it. I want to thank you very much for being on the show tonight. And congratulations for your fourth ring, first in the IWFL. Congratulations, Coach.
Thank you. We're going to take some time to enjoy it.
Now, you enjoy it, and have a good evening, and I will talk to you soon enough.
Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
You too. That was Coach Hughes of the IWFL Tier 1 Dallas Diamond 2008 Champions. Congratulations again. That makes three guests tonight, all of them coaches in women's football right now. They're all in the IWFL, and I saw some good football. The differences, I talked about most of the stuff with the coaches, about, you know, the things that I saw. To me, them not scoring or taking a field goal on the first drive of the game was huge. I actually walked up to Coach Graham of the Clarksville Fox and said, that's it. They just lost the game right there. Not the fact that they couldn't push the ball in, but the fact that they didn't even attempt a field goal. I mean, it's so important to get points against Dallas, and I don't think they were being cocky. I don't think they were underestimating Dallas. I think he was trying for the most amount of points he could get, and there's nothing wrong with that. Put in the same situation, I would have done the exact same thing. Right now, you're on third along with Coach Penn. I'm Coach Penn. There's a chat board available on there if you're listening. You can hop in, chat, throw some questions out there to me if you want to talk about the Tier 1 or Tier 2 championship game. You can call in if you want. The number's 347-826-7278. Some of the other thing I saw Chicago did wrong, because I think Chicago beat themselves. I don't necessarily think that Dallas beat them. I think Springer was unstoppable and ended up winning the game for Dallas based on the sudden death overtime rules that the IWFL employs. Chicago played better than what the score indicated, because they probably should have scored at least two more times, and questionable calls on fourth down. Both teams chose to go for it rather than punt most of the evening. I think both teams punted twice. Dallas had one of those punts blocked, which was just huge right there. Dallas, which doesn't miss extra points, missed an extra point. Then we also had the usage of timeouts. The Chicago really mismanaged the timeouts, and I spent a good part of 5 minutes during the third quarter explaining this to somebody new to football who was doing a documentary, and she was just the face behind the camera, and she was like, I don't understand. What do you mean that was a bad call? All they did was call a timeout, right? I'm like, well, second half in the championship game, you're most likely going to need the timeouts at the end of the game if it's a close game. And truthfully, from the beginning of the game, it looked like who's going to have the ball last. Well, guess what? Dallas had the ball last. They won. Congratulations. Can't wait till next season. I've heard lots of rumors about, you know, Dallas retiring a bunch of players, but, you know, give that room. Just look at Brett Favre. What an idiot. I'm going to retire. 2 months later, I was forced into saying that. I didn't really want to say it. I want to play football. Football gets into you, and once it gets into you, it does not get out. You play until you can't walk, a la Dan Marino. That's the reason he quit. He had to walk away because his knees couldn't take it anymore. Joe Namath, same thing. You play until you can't go. That's it for the Tier 1 game. Like I said, if you have questions, just throw them on the chat board. I'll try and get to them. Right now, I'm going to go over to the NWFA, the league championship game that I did not see. The thing that impresses me about them, the NWFA does stats and recaps more consistently and better than the IWFL. That's the one thing I think the IWFL really needs to prove on, is how they get their stats done. There was a complete statistical breakdown of the entire game a day or two after the game, so that was amazing. The IWFL game had the advantage of being in Chicago, and Chicago actually making the game. If Chicago, you're welcome, Coach Konecki. You have a good night. I really appreciated you joining. If the IWFL hadn't had Chicago in the game, I think there still would have been a ton of fans there, but I don't think it would have been in excess of 3,000. My optimistic view and hopeful is that it would have been, but truthfully, I don't think it would have been. But they did have over 3,000 people there, and that looks good on the IWFL. The NWFA game states their attendance as 328. That's a normal home game for most teams, a little bit more than some in the smaller markets. I know that we average probably 350 or 400 in our games this year, yet we are in a bigger market than, you know, Milliken, Tennessee. This game was not close. Not at all. And that was basically because of the turnovers and just mistakes by Western Michigan. And nothing to take away from the H-down defense, because obviously to shut down the number one offensive scoring team in the league, you got to have something to do with defense right there. Western Michigan took the opening drive right down the field. Howell scored on a 20-yard run. Boom. H-Town couldn't do anything, then ended up stopping them. And from there was all H-Town. They couldn't be stopped. Western Michigan's defense could not stop H-Town. And let me get into some of the stats. One of the things I want to throw out there is that they only have 5 referees for the game, and you will have to understand that championship games, I think, are supposed to have 7, and they only had 5, and we worked with 5 all year, but we told the referees that if we made the playoffs and we actually had a home game, we wanted to bump it up to 6. And they said it's very hard to work with 6. It's much easier to work with 7. So that's one of the plans we had if the Quake had made the playoffs. We were going to run with 7 officials. We only had 5, and there were only 3 penalties called in the whole game, and that was they were all against H-Town for 35 yards, so it looks like they had 2 personal fouls and a minor offsides or false start. First downs are pretty even, 13-18. Net rushing yards, big discrepancy there. H-Town had 252, where Western Michigan had 126. And the thing about that is they ran about the same amount of plays each, 65 plays for H-Town, 60 for Western Michigan. So there was a huge discrepancy in the fact that H-Town spent 90% of their plays running the ball, where Western Michigan not only had to play from behind, but are a balanced team. Had 23 throws, 33 rushes, you know, so they tried to balance, but they were unable to complete passes. In the second half, they had 3 turnovers via interception, and that's because they were trying to play catch-up. It was 26-10 at halftime, so they were already two-plus touchdowns behind, so I understand they had to throw the ball, and H-Town's defense knew they had to throw the ball and took advantage of it. The place where it really, really gets crazy is the fact that Michigan had the ball most of the first half. Second half, all H-Town did was grind it out and use 21 of the 30 minutes off the clock. Actually, it was 22 minutes. 22 minutes they had the ball in the second half. It's hard to come back when the other team has the ball, unless your defense is scoring, which they obviously weren't. Let's get into some of the stats. H-Town was all about McIntosh. McIntosh had 147 yards rushing, and then she had 99 receiving, so she had over almost 250 of their total yards. That's just crazy, because they only had 370 to begin with, so she was a big part of their defense. The game changed, I guess you could say, right on the, H-Town had to punt, then Western Michigan had to punt, and then H-Town got it, and 3 plays later, they're in the end zone on a 48-yard run by McIntosh. Boom, there's the game right there. The game changed at the 5:52 mark in the first quarter, because H-Town called a timeout. From that point on, Western Michigan was unable to move the ball as successfully as it had in the previous 15 plays. So that was huge. They were they scored the touchdown right before the beginning of the second quarter, and then Western Michigan got the ball back. Boom. Bad punt by Western Michigan. Puts the ball, I mean, you're at the 47-yard line, all you have to do is kick it deep. Nobody in women's football can kick it 47 yards in the air. The furthest one we had this year was 50, and that landed at about 40 and rolled for 10, and then I know Chicago had like an 80-yard punt, but that rolled forever. I haven't seen a woman in women's football that can kick it, not net, but from where she kicks it to where it goes, 60 yards. So just kick it as far as you can, as high as you can, as far as you can. Obviously, it was a shank off the side of the foot. H-Town should have been backed up way deep in their end zone. Unfortunately, it wasn't. 3 plays later, boom, McIntosh on another 56-yard run for a touchdown. And then the game just goes crazy because huge turnover by Western Michigan. They have a huge drive all the way down to the, 1 yard line? Yeah, 1 yard line, and or no, 2 yard line, or fumbled. And then turnover, touchdown. Guess what? Same thing happens again. Turnover, touchdown. So it's just, it's bad. And then, you know, after those 2 turnovers, and, you know, just being down so much. They're down 20-7 now. They get a good drive going, but they have to settle for a field goal after their drive stalls at the 11-yard line. Second half was just it. H-Town got the ball first because they won the toss and elected to defer, so they got the ball first. Knowing they're up 26-10, you know, basically a two-score game, they take that first drive, boom, gone. Rush throws a pass to who else? Ben McIntosh for 41 yards complete. That's the backbreaker right there. Boom. Game is over. And it just was rough on there because Western Michigan had to go directly to the passing game, and they couldn't complete it. H-Town was ready, and they kept on getting interception after interception after interception. And I'm not sure why at a certain point at the beginning of the fourth quarter, down, it was 33-10, why they didn't go for a field goal when they got close. They're at the 3-yard line, and I know they're down by 23 points, but, you know, a field goal at least puts you within 3 touchdowns, and, you know, you start trying your onside kicks. But they didn't. I'm not sure if they had a kicker or if they were just like, you know, let's just try and score. We're at the 3-yard line. Then they just turned the ball over a couple more times, and that was the end of the game. You got to give props out to H-Town's defense for a magnificent job shutting down the best, I guess you could say, offense in the NWA, statistically speaking. I'm sure both teams got a lot of film and that they're both fine-tuned on that. But congratulations to H-Town. That means two out of three champions in the two leagues came from the big old state of Texas. H-Town, based in Houston, and then Dallas Diamonds. Of course, everybody knows where Dallas is. Even if you don't even know what football is, you know where Dallas is. Come on, Cowboys, right? Actually, Saturday, I will be actually heading up to Oxnard to see the Dallas Cowboys training camp. You know, Oxnard's right up the road from me. I will be checking the Cowboys out, see if I can get in with Tony Romo, have a talk, maybe throw some popcorn at T.O. I don't know. I'm not a big Cowboys fan. I'm a Dolphins fan, even though I don't really follow the NFL that much because they're all a bunch of spoiled, overpaid, you know, kids, basically, which I over-spoiled, paid kid, but I'm not. I am a volunteer football coach for women's football, and you know what? I love every second of it, no matter how much I have to yell, cuss, and scream. It's all about getting to the championship game and proving that not only your style of football, but that you can guide young ladies. Yeah, BJ, thanks. Appreciate that. She's on the chat board. She's saying, I don't cuss or scream. Obviously, she wasn't listening, or that was a really big joke. Guiding the ladies and teaching them football, because football is a great game. You know, they say America is America's favorite pastime. Well, guess what? It's pastime. Football is the present and probably the future. So many more people are getting into football. I mean, look at all the ladies playing around the country. There's two leagues right now. Football is being played by a lot of those teams in the leagues, and silly season is ready to go. That's right. 2008 is over. Let's start with 2009. The upcoming shows, every Wednesday, I am going to have a hot topic issue, and I expect you people out there to get on the chats and call in, because I'm not going to sit here and just give my opinion and let everybody say, hey, well, that's his opinion. Well, guess what? Let me hear yours. What do you think about the IWFL and NWFA and the defunct WPFL that may come back? Who knows? I want to know. What do you feel, and how do you feel about other people creating new leagues, diluting the talent pool instead of trying to work with the other leagues and creating a better system for women's football to move forward? What about officials? Do we need something done with that? How about game tapes? Who's reviewing? How much a week do you practice? How many hours a week do you practice? What do you do in the off season? Do you run football clinics, strength and conditioning programs? How do you get your ladies out there and participating in this? Do they realize how much work they have to put in to become a champion? All you have to do is talk to Coach Hughes, talk to Coach Stahl. You can talk to Poppy from the H-Town. You know, there's a lot of hard work that goes into being a champion. It just will not be handed to you on a silver platter. So next week we will talk silly season talk. What team is joining different leagues? It already started a week ago with the Philadelphia Phoenix. As in true form, a phoenix rises from the ashes and is born again. Well, guess what? This Phoenix burned down. Now it's called a Firebird. So the Philadelphia Firebirds are now in the IWFL, and they are just the most recent team in a long line of teams defecting from the NWFA to the IWFL, and I'm sure they've gone back and forth. So next week I will walk right into silly season, and we will move on from there. Each week I should have a coach and some opinions about what they think the leagues need to do for the coaches to make not only our lives easier, but the league better. And that's because that's what it's all about, improving the league so that we can move forward football. You know, I don't necessarily look to get paid, but eventually I hope that this becomes my employment, because I don't want to coach college or high school football. I want to coach college football or professional women's football. So next week, silly season begins. Congratulations to H-Town. Congratulations to the Montreal Blitz. Congratulations to the Dallas Diamonds. And to each of the teams, these teams played for the championship. That is huge. You made it to the championship game. Be proud, Clarksville. Be proud, Western Michigan. And be very proud, Chicago Force. That was one hell of a show you put on. Just remember, don't become the Cubs. Don't say, wait till next year. Get out there, get the work done, and make it happen next year. Don't. It ain't about talk. It's about walk. You know, put those helmets on, put those shoulder pads on. When you take them off, get in the weight room. Get out there, start running, working that conditioning so that the fourth quarter you're just as strong as you were in the first quarter. WFB Talk this Sunday will have Jeff King, the president of the Women's Football Alliance, another football league being started. I won't say anything negative. Just listen to him talk, and then we can discuss it later on my show if you listened. Because if you didn't listen to that one, how are you going to, you know, talk about it with me? Because I'm going to be listening, so what are you going to be doing? My computer is about ready to go dead, so I am going to sign off for the evening. Thank you to Coach White of the Alerno Mayhem. Thank you to Coach Konecki of the Chicago Force, and thank you very much, Coach Hughes of the Dallas Diamonds. You guys are great tonight. I appreciate you being on my show, and I hope to have you on the show again. This has been Third and Long with Coach Penn. I will see you when I see you, and you guys will hear me next week at the same time, 7 p.m. PST. That's Pacific Standard Time for all you people that aren't good with acronyms. Have a good night, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your week.